Is your business struggling? Do you need a custom business plan to get ahead? All you need to do is ask Sharifa, the premier business consultant who is focused on your success. From digital marketing to business planning, I bring over 25 years of experience to work for you. As a host of three different talk shows, I can get you connected to your audience right away. Visit AskSharifa.com for more information. Do not face the unknown alone. Good morning, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have yet another exciting show for you today. I have some incredible guests that you just want to meet. But you know what I always ask you to do? Go ahead and share this show, share this video, because friends, do not let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. Today, we are going to be discussing, if nothing else, what's going on in the world, but how it's affecting our guests today. Our first guest is Alexa. Alexa, the people who know me, the guests who see me on my show, they know the one thing I struggle with is names. Once I get past the names, I'm good. So I'm not even going to try to butcher your name. You are just going to be Alexa for one moment. But Alexa is a best-selling author of Power to Persevere. Good morning, Alexa. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I am excellent. Excellent. I tried to pronounce your name. Pronounce it for me.
Cucchiata.
Oh, wow.
It's Italian. Wow.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask. Okay. I love Italian. I love French. Like those languages, you can say just about anything and it just sounds good.
Yeah. It's spoon in Italian. Cucchiata. Big spoon.
I don't know how we introduce the spoon. But I love it. Let's say something else. What else can we say in Italian?
What else can I say right now?
Yes.
About my name?
Anything.
I'm the author, like you said, of Power to Persevere. I actually have the book. Where did it go? Oh, right here. Power to Persevere. And I wrote it last year, published it last year as well, in December. And it is a whole entire book about perseverance and getting over challenging moments. I was inspired by my cancer journey that I had when I was 19 and 20 years old to write a book that I wish that I had to read when I was going through treatment. Just a book of encouragement to let others know that you have to trust the battle that you're given. Know that it's happening for you to learn from. It's not happening to you. And any circumstance that is bleak is really there to just teach you lessons and let you learn a lot about yourself. And there will be a light at the end of the tunnel.
That is beautiful. Now, would you hold the book again for us, please?
Here it is.
When did you write the book?
I wrote it last year. It was actually crazy how it all came about. So let's backtrack a little bit. I was living a normal life, a normal college girl, taking on the world. I felt as if I had everything at my fingertips. It worked so hard to achieve everything that I got to so far. I had started a jewelry company. I was going to school studying fashion and business. I was going to take this on full time after college. And then I wasn't really feeling well my sophomore year of school. So this was in like 2016, 2017. And this huge lymph node the size of a golf ball actually popped up on my collarbone. I'm like, what is this? So I went to go to some doctors, got some tests done. Everything kept coming back negative. I'm still there after my summer internship. And I figured, you know what? I need to go get this checked out again for like the 100th time. And I went to another ears, nose, and throat specialist. And he was like, I do not like the size of that. I don't like where it is. We're going to take it out next week. I'm like, okay. So now it's the week before I'm supposed to start my junior year of college. And I have this surgery, and then the first week, syllabus week is what we call it, of school, my junior year, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, had to start chemotherapy right away, and then just a few days after I turned 20 is when I actually began treatment. And I went through all these crazy experiences and emotions, and I learned so much about the world, so much about mindset, so much about the body, that I was actually inspiring so many of my friends who were at uni. And they kept mentioning, Lexa, you need to write a book. You need to share this with everyone. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to do that. It's kind of scary to be vulnerable and put myself out there. I'm not ready to talk about this. And then once I started school again, after taking a year off, I just had this gut feeling that I needed to share my story and journey and insight. So I met a few young authors, and then I knew that it was possible for me to write a book. So last year, I started to write a book during my spring semester of my junior year, my real junior year of college. And it was just published this past fall semester, at the end of the semester, just for preference, like school preferences. But it was published in December. And now I'm just sharing my story, speaking, doing a lot of speaking engagements, going to schools. Well, not right now. A lot of things have changed. But I'm just getting out there and teaching others about perseverance, especially at a young age.
Wow, that's a lesson a lot of people need to learn. We're going to discuss that and talk a little bit about that a little bit more in a few minutes. I want to introduce our next guest, Abiola Bella. And Abiola is in London. Like I always tell people, if you want to be a guest, don't worry about where you are, connecting people through Zoom from all over the world. And Abiola Bella is also an author. Good morning, Abiola. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm excellent. Thank you for joining us. You look beautiful. Love your hair.
Oh, thank you. Do you know what? My hair is a mess. And I found this headband so I could look half decent for this video. I thought it was a podcast at first. So I was in like my pajamas, my hair, but it was crazy. And then my PR was like, you know, you've got it today. It's on Facebook Live. And I was like, oh, it's on Facebook Live. I had to find a headband or something to look somewhat presentable.
You know what? The thing is weird that one of the things that I've seen during this global pandemic is a lot of people come on the show and they're like, oh, I'm not even made up. I can't go to the beautician. I can't get this done. And to me, it's like, you just look beautiful. You look amazing. I love your hair. Maybe the headband covers the roots, but you know, you look beautiful. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And you're an author as well. Tell us a little bit about your book.
Yes, I've written a fantasy middle grade story about a young teenage warrior called Emily Knight. And it's basically her journey into discovering who she is, becoming this hero that everyone wants her to be. And because it's fantasy, it's going to end in an epic war. And I've done two books so far. I'll just hold it up so you can see. This is book one. It's very colourful. And then this is book two. And then book three is out in September. So it'll be four parts to the book. So yeah, so it's really, really cool. I came up with the concept of the idea when I was 12. I grew up watching like a lot of anime. So like, I love Dragon Ball Z and I'd read a lot of X-Men. All my family were obsessed with wrestling. And I kind of just wanted to read something that I like to watch. And that's really how the concept of the book came about. And then when I went to university, my editor, who was from New York, and she worked at a big publishing house, she came over to teach a semester here. And she was very pro-diversity. And she was asking me how come my main character wasn't a Black girl. And it hadn't even dawned on me that there was such a lack of representation, especially in UK books. And I was hesitant to make her Black just because there used to be like this bookshop, this massive chain, and they used to have a section in the bookshop just for Black writers. And I didn't want to be put in like just a section. I wanted to just be like in the kids section, not in like a Black section or whatever. So I thought I was going to be boxed in if I was a Black writer writing about a Black girl. So I was like, let me think about it and just see how I can make it. I don't want it to be about race. I just want it to really be about this girl's journey in terms of her, her strength, more about the color of her skin. So once I figured that out, I did then make her Black. And actually, that was the best idea, especially over here. I'm sure it's the same in America, but there's a massive diversity issue in children's books. And everyone's trying to make things a bit more diverse and inclusive. So I'm really glad that I kind of got ahead of that jump and saw that. So yeah.
Very interesting. I guess I always say in a show, I always see some commonality in the guests. Today we have authors, but we also have accents. I love your accent as well, Aviola. It's
thank you.
Have you always lived in London?
Yeah, I was born in London, me and my siblings. My parents are from Nigeria, so they came over here when they were, I want to say maybe early 20s, they met over here. So yeah, I've always lived in London. I've been to America a few times and loved it. I've been to New York. I've got family there, and Florida and Chicago and Atlanta. But I really want to go to LA. My friend actually runs a dance program. She runs it here, and she takes about 20 dancers from here over to LA to train there with all the dancers. And she's always telling me to come with her. So I think once lockdown is over and we can actually travel again, I might take off on that offer.
Absolutely. When you come to Los Angeles, please be sure to look me up. I want to find out what's going on with you.
Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely do that.
Yes. So in addition to my guests and how they usually line up, for some reason, and I talk about this often, I can get plenty of women to be guests. And I've been told that it's because women love to talk. We love to share. We love to talk about what's going on in our world. And the men are usually like, nope, don't talk about it. Don't want to have a discussion. So it's usually like either all women or I'll have a man, which brings us to our next guest, Mr. Kyle Wingfield, who is a breath of fresh air to the financial industry. Good morning, Kyle. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. See, I can say wink certain names. I can get out. It sounds, you know, like it's pronounced. So I love your background. Tell us a little bit about what you have going on back there.
I'm sitting at home in my study at home. So I'm a big comic book fan. So I end up, this is a, what do you call this? A comic book cover that was signed by the actual artist, and I got it framed because I enjoy going to Comic-Con, at least International Comic-Con in San Diego. So I grew up a geek and a nerd. I'm still proud to be a geek and a nerd. And if it weren't for what I do in the financial industry, I'd probably be full-time gamer, but I'm also married with two little kids. So full-time gaming is not a great way to build a relationship. But nonetheless, I commissioned an artist friend of mine to do a drawing of Malcolm X, which is this ebony pencil drawing here that's framed up. And right behind me is a rendition of the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. I went to the Smithsonian African American History Museum, and I saw this button, and I thought to myself, that'd be really cool to have in my study that says black is beautiful. It's got a panther in the middle there. I've got the USA Today Centennial Special of Ronald Reagan. My grandmother had a role in his administration. And then, I mean, I've got a whole bunch of stuff on the wall back here that's inspirational. I ran for public office early in life when I was 22 years old, running for state delegate, which would be, I guess in New York, it'd be an assemblyman or any of that stuff. So in Maryland, we call them delegates, which would be the state equivalent of a congressman. So I ran there, got pretty close to winning, and then that wasn't my fate and didn't want to make a career out of politics. And so the rest of the art, if you were to go up and down the wall, I'm a geek. So I've got some Star Wars stuff there signed by the original Chewbacca. So you know, obviously he passed away with Peter Mayhew, but I got a chance to see him in San Diego at Comic-Con. So a big comic book buff, I still collect comic books and read them. And my proudest piece of the collection is I have the first complete series from 1 to 65 of the Black Panther. And I also have Luke Cage, the first series, and Luke Cage number one in mint condition all the way up to the first, I think it's the first 22 of Luke Cage. So really excited there. So to your point, Aviola, in terms of representation, I think when I saw, as a kid, when I saw Black superheroes, it really spoke to me because they look like me. So that was a big deal. Yeah. And they're really cool too. So we all know T'Challa is not only wildly wealthy, but he's crazy smart. So it's neat to see that.
Wow. I enjoyed that tour. It was almost like a museum going through different pieces of history. So I found it very enjoyable. And I said almost everyone was an author. Are you an author as well?
I am. I contributed to a book that came out probably, I think, in 2014 called Successonomics. But the chapter I contributed was called The Four Money Mistakes in Your Blind Spot. And so this comes out as a booklet now that if you are someone who's thinking about whether or not my organization is for you, or how can we put something of value in your hands to help you make a better decision financially moving forward, we like to give you the four money mistakes in your blind spot, because of course, if they were obvious, people probably wouldn't make them so much, but these were not obvious. And I found the reception to be huge. People are like, oh my gosh, I'm making this mistake, I'm making that mistake. And then wanting to know why they're mistakes and how can they correct them and put themselves on solid ground, at least in their financial future. So it's been a big success. And then I write little booklets like this all the time. So I've got two more coming out that I'm excited about. And I blog all of the time. So it's just, I just type all the time, just my ideas and thoughts, trying to improve upon the plans.
That is very interesting, because when I looked at my notes, and these are my notes that I wrote, I confused myself. I'm like, breath of fresh air to the financial industry. And I said, is that a book? Did I, miss the title? Because I'm waiting for the best-selling author next to it. So I confused myself. But one of the things that I definitely see is that you're a Renaissance man, that you can't be put in one box, in one little category. You do a lot of different things. And you started off with the fun aspect with the comics and the Comic Con. And then you're like, but I help people with their finances. So why do you consider yourself a breath of fresh air?
Great question. I think if you think about what the majority of financial advisors, how they approach the business, just kind of how people view the financial services industry, especially as you get prepared for retirement and trying to transition to retirement, it's kind of the same old stuff. You know, it's like, hey, rate of return matters. And if you think about what's going on now in the markets with all of the volatility, most everybody is telling you, just wait it out. Everything's going to be fine. Ride it out. And my question is, ride it to where? We can't sweep under the rug that there are 20 plus million people unemployed. $1.4 billion is being lost weekly in the hospitality industry. And retail is 25% of America's gross domestic product. And basically, they told that you're closed till further notice. So the woes of Main Street will eventually show up on Wall Street. And so we've got that. So how do you deal with that volatility? How can you solidify your financial future? So I think I just take a different approach. I always tell people different isn't always better, but better is always different. And we do take it, we look at things differently. I mean, I'm sure everybody knows what a prism is, right? When you shine light through it, if you hold it one way, it's just white light. If you just tilt it, you get a beautiful rainbow. And I think I just kind of look at people's situation or their position and figure out where can they be better and how can we leave them better than we found them and make them more efficient so they can have financial security moving forward, and all the different moving parts they're probably not thinking about that could jack that up. Can we get in front of that ahead of time with some education? All, of course, from a posture of love, because people don't want to deal. What you do every day is is based on habit, but your habits are based on what you believe. I think at some point, when you're talking money, it's not, money isn't everything, but it's right up there with there, right? So I think people say, oh yeah, money can't buy happiness. No, it can't, but you know what? If you end up in a hard spot and then you're broke too, that just exacerbates things. I constantly joke my life partner and my wife, Ashley. I said, hey, listen, if something happens to me, it's going to suck. She's like, I don't want anything to happen to you. I said, no, I don't, honey, listen, but you're going to be straight. You'll be able to have plenty of money to be able to figure out what you want to do, right? And so that's a little bit easier than being broke too and losing the house and losing all this stuff. So I just think on many levels, it doesn't, if you ask the average financial advisor how to deal with something, you're going to get a similar response. And then I look at it like a chessboard. And all I'm trying to do is help my clients and help people who may not be clients, but part of the community, just constantly checkmate life, at least financially speaking.
I love that. You had a couple of little quotes and little ditties in there that I really enjoyed. And it just reminded me of a personal situation that happened yesterday, where I went to the Home Depot and I had an order that was to be picked up. It was just drive up, they bring it out to you, and it's fine. So we were there for maybe 20, 30 minutes, and I start to get frustrated. I'm waiting in the car. Finally, I walk over to the representative, and I'm like, where are these people who are supposed to bring out my order? And he says, well, we don't have enough staff. We have low staffing. We're trying to help everyone. So I asked him, I said, why is it that you have low staffing and unemployment is through the roof? I said, that just kind of confuses me. But I told him, he was a young kid. I mean, he couldn't have been more than about 19. But I told him, I said, don't worry. It's not your fault. It's not Home Depot's fault. You know, it's just a question that I asked because wait times are through the roof. You can go to a store. No one's there to help you. But yet in a day, at least here in California, there's probably 250,000 people in a day who file for unemployment. So those are questions that we have to ask in order to make the world better. Which I want to move on to my next guest, Pamela Goodwin. She's also a trainer, a success consultant, and she's a best-selling author. Good morning, Pamela. How are you?
Hi, good morning from Dallas, Texas. We are a commercial real estate firm here based in Dallas, and we specialize in retail and restaurants, which it's an interesting time now to see once people open. But I know a little bit about the unemployment just from the low staff on this. It's, you know, a lot of the unemployment's paying people more than $600 a week. So people are making more off of unemployment than going back to work. So I think that's definitely contributing to the low staff in a lot of these retail restaurant venues.
I definitely agree. So I don't know where else that is, but I know here in California, they receive an additional $600 a week on top of the unemployment they would have normally received. But there are so many ways to boost the economy. But I want to talk about a little bit about your, we're going to discuss that. But Pamela, tell us a little bit about your book.
Sure. My first book is 1 Cent Lemonade to $1 Million Deals. And 25 jobs and 25 lessons I wish I'd learned sooner. And I wrote this probably about 4 or 5 years ago. I had the opportunity to meet, if you know Zig Ziglar, the motivational speaker, he's based here in Dallas, Texas. And he put his arm around me and said, Pam, have you ever written a book? And at that time I said, no. And he said, that will give you the most credibility ever. And I think that's one of the best business advice I've ever taken. Started my business 14 years ago, always worked on the corporate side, landlord, large shopping center development, and then worked for Brinker International, who owned 7 restaurants at the time. You may know a couple of them. They currently own Chili's and Maggiano's. So with them, I was able to develop more than 50 Chili's from the ground up and found out how some of these landlords were able to profit more than $850,000 by doing a ground lease with Chili's. So 14 years ago, I started my own business and we develop property. We specialize in retail. So we will buy the land and then lease it back to, you know, Walgreens, Chase, McDonald's type tenants. And then people ask me, you know, how do you make money in real estate? So then I created an audio program and it shows you, it walks you through how to make $1 million on one deal. So that's what I'm going around the country speaking on that and helping people, you know, get out of financial debt and how to, a lot of people want to know how to get into commercial real estate, but it seems overwhelming to them. So last year I launched a TV show on Propelio TV and we did a weekly show on how people can get started. And it just really walks them through step by step on the whole process.
Okay, well, I'm taking notes. Let me get my little pen. Let me get my paper right now. This is for my notes for my show. This is my opportunity to learn from the people who know. How do you get started in commercial real estate?
So I always tell people that every day that you drive around, everything is for sale. It just comes down to timing and it comes down to money. And, you know, finding that opportunity, you know, I can definitely help you. So for an example, somebody will see a Burger King that went out and they're thinking, oh, that would be a good Starbucks. I don't have that in my neighborhood. And so I also have written just a, 25 ways to get started in commercial real estate. And I'm happy to share that with you and your viewers. I always recommend downloading on app LoopNet, LOOPNet, loopnet.com. And you can just click on that. You can find out what's for sale in your neighborhood. And that's a good way to get started. And then everybody says, then Pam, I don't have the money to get started. And I always tell people that is the easiest thing to find the money for a deal. It's more difficult to find the deal. The money, it's so available out there. And especially now with what's going on, they're predicted at least in the Dallas area, and I've heard it around the country, that probably 30 to 35% of the restaurants will not be reopening, which is, kind of definitely sad to hear. But on the positive side, there's some opportunities for people that wanted to open a restaurant or wanted to buy that building. So there's always opportunities that come from something like this.
I love the opportunities, a blessing in the middle of a curse. Give us one example of ways to find the money.
One way is I'm actively involved, I'm on LinkedIn every single day and, posting things. So if I have a property that I need money, I will get bombarded with people wanting to loan money. I also recommend, for example, I just helped a lady. She wanted to, from the ground up, build senior living. She's been placing people all over the, city. And so I helped her. I also do consulting work. And so I was able to help her get a $3.3 million SBA loan. There's that way. There's friends and family to, equity partners. They always say, to use other people's money. We can, we can go to Kyle. I bet he has some great resources on some financial.
We're going to use Kyle's money.
Yeah, we're going to use Kyle's money. We're going to use Kyle's, some of his partners that he teams up with. You can just ask around, but right now I'm helping two people find money on their deals, and it's definitely available. So find the deal, find the opportunity, find that vacant building, and that's a good way to get started. Or if you want to open up a fitness place, or I always say like McDonald's is a real estate company, they own more than $40 billion in real estate, and they're just selling hamburgers to pay the rent.
Yes, I've heard that before. I want to go over to you, Kyle. So let's talk on that, because Pamela believes that you and your network have money. So what are your thoughts on that?
I'd say, it just depends, because I work with people from all walks of life, but I have attracted a number of commercial real estate developers and residential real estate developers as clients, as clientele. And one of the strategies that we spend a lot of time, or at least I spend a lot of time educating them on, is something I call the private reserve strategy. And I think just for your viewers and for you all, the way that strategy works, I'll try to paint a picture with my words. So most of the real estate investors I've met are either trying to get the money from the bank, which makes sense, but at some point, the bank might say, hey, your loan to value is a little too high. You've already got five loans out, whatever. The other piece is they just like to do the 1031 game and just keep trading up, which is one approach as well. And they will, or they have cash and they'll just be like, hey, listen, I'm just going to write a check and get the property and I'm going to fix it up. I'll flip it or do whatever, which is also another approach. So then I ask the question, well, would you be interested in potentially taking those same dollars you're going to write a check for cash against? Like you say, okay, I got $1 million. I'm going to take $1 million and pay cash for the property. I said, once you do that, where's the cash? It's gone. It's tied up in the property. So you're not getting that money back until you flip that property, turn it around, or you lease it out, and then you start getting it back piecemeal. So then I said, well, listen, if we could keep your money working for you, compounding, earning 4, 5, 6, 7, whatever the percentage is. And then if you needed access to capital, you could just collateralize those dollars. So watch this. You collateralize, which is a fancy word for you borrow against the money, right? And then the financial institution gives you their money at whatever the loan rate is while your money continues to work. So this money is compounding at 4, 5, 6, 7%. My biggest question to anybody is, When should you interrupt compound interest? That's called never. Don't ever do that, right? So if we can keep having that, having our money grow. So let's take a simple public math here, $1 million earning 7% is $70,000 the next year. Well, you could always take the $1 million out of circulation and use it for a real estate deal, but now you're not earning the seven. Why would you interrupt that? What if you could get your hands on maybe 400,000, 500,000, 700,000, or for the concept, the million, keep a million working while you use a million on the real estate deal, turn that deal around, and then either put the money back into the private reserve or move on to the next deal. Either way, you don't interrupt your money. And I think when I say that and I start teaching that course to real estate investors, that's who it's attractive to in the beginning. But then I can democratize it and take it down a couple of notches, because now we start talking about money that goes inside that particular reserve. It goes in after tax dollars, and then all that money grows and compounds tax free. So when you have access to it, you're not paying taxes on it. So now you can kind of pivot and say, okay, but with all this stimulus that's going on right now, what do you think is going to happen to future tax rates? I mean, they're going up or down. I think most people are like, well, they're probably going up. Well, you bet, because we had $23 trillion in debt, and then the government started, you know, writing checks to, you know, bailing out industries, doing stimulus. And so who do you think is paying for that? I mean, everybody's going to the bar getting a drink, but somebody's got to pay the tab. That's called the pro, you and me. Right? We're going to have to pay it. And so where do you think tax rates are going? They're already slated to double over the next 30 years. So we just compress that time frame. So my question to everyone is, what's the pivot? What's the plan to be more tax efficient in the future? Because if taxes go up, that means you'll have potentially less money to spend, because you got to write a bigger check to the government. So I think if you start to understand that private reserve strategy, it becomes really, really powerful. And for the commercial clients, commercial real estate investors, and residential real estate investors that I have, it's powerful because they're in a way able to do hard money lending if they'd like.
You can tell this is what you do. You gave that example. I'm sitting over here taking notes. I learned a lot. I was just waiting for you to go to your bank account, Kyle, and write the check for my new project, my new building. That's what I was hoping for.
Oh, that's what you want. Okay, well. And call me afterwards.
Okay, we'll talk. But let's go back to some of the tips that you mentioned earlier. I believe it was four of them. Can you give us a couple that you mentioned from what you mentioned earlier, Kyle?
Well, okay, so the four tips. Money mistakes. So yes. So one of the money mistakes that that many people make that they don't realize they're making is paying off the mortgage. And I know that's like the biggest, and it's kind of a controversial topic. So I just look at financial products. A mortgage is a financial product. Your house, the two largest assets any person owns typically ends up being the equity in their home and their retirement plan. They're saving the money they're putting in their retirement plan, either at work or an employer or in the business that they own. And so the question is parking money in the walls of your house the most efficient and best place for those dollars? That's really what, that's the question at the beginning. And then why is paying off the mortgage a mistake? Well, you can dig into I can dig into that, but that's one of the mistakes. The second mistake that people make is what I like to call it creating, well, we know this one, creating consumer debt and like just carrying consumer debt. And I think we need to differentiate between liability and debt, because a lot of people see their mortgage as debt when in fact it's a liability for most people. Because here's my definition of debt. It's when you are you owe a certain amount of money, and the only way in which to pay that money back is on future earnings that you've yet to earn. So that would be debt. If you own a piece of real estate like your house, typically the house is worth more than what you owe on it, because the bank's not going to, at least nowadays, is loaning you 80% or 90%. So if you ever want to be out of debt on your mortgage, just sell the property. But then there's an issue of you need a place to live, right? So I always tell people that's a liability, not a debt. And so a bigger mistake people do is they go ahead and own what we call non-qualified investments. That would just be investments that are taxable. So you earn some money, you pay taxes on it, then you put it in an investment or brokerage account. What most people fail to realize is that that account was funded with after-tax dollars. So you already paid taxes once. So the next step is then you want this money in this taxable account to grow. If it has earnings, you will then pay taxes on the earnings, even though you didn't take distributions from the account. So I always look at that and say, that's tax me as I go. And that's kind of pretty inefficient, because what do we want the account to do? Grow. If it does, who do we pay? The government in the form of taxes. So people have tendency to think that, well, if I just get a higher rate of return on that taxable account, I'm going to be good to go. And I'm like, the higher the rate of return, the bigger the tax, right? So helping people understand that and then understand how to pivot. It doesn't mean that doing these approaches are bad. It's just if you do them all out and don't realize the impact it's going to have. And that's what I've noticed just in my career. Most people don't realize the impact of their financial decisions. They just only have whatever they know or whatever they believe, and they think it's right. I heard someone, I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson, said, people know enough to think they're right, but not enough to know they're wrong. I think that's where I step in. I'm that bridge where I say, listen, I want to help you think about this in a critical way. And then they run to the internet, which is absolutely the epitome of confirmation bias. So don't worry, you can always find what you're looking for when you go to the internet. So if you don't like an idea, you can find someone who doesn't like it as well, and then that justifies you. So and then the fourth one is actually contributing to an IRA or contributing to a qualified plan at work, like a 401k, a TSP, or a 403b, over and above the company match, if you receive a match. Now, it's not that these things are bad, but if you think about it, if you think tax rates are going to be higher in the future, you're putting your money in a pre-taxed account where you are postponing the taxation to a later date, and yet you don't control where tax rates are going to be or what taxes you pay on that money. And again, that's the second largest asset that most people have that they're going to count on to use in retirement when they either scale back on work or don't work. So I think that's when you're the most vulnerable, and all of a sudden the government's like, hey, guess what? Instead of getting 24% taxes, we're going to take 50 or 60% taxes. And so thinking through that with people and helping them understand that this is what you know. Now, this is what you know you don't know. There's a whole bunch of stuff out there that you don't even know you don't know. That's where I hang out. And if it makes sense to them, I make it new to them. So, or I make it real to them. I say, hey, listen, did you know you could do this? What else is possible?
Tell you're someone that you have a lot of knowledge, a lot of information. We're definitely going to have to get you back on the show because you shared a lot. At least I know where to go first. I'm going to go find that project, that commercial real estate that I'm interested in buying. I'm going to talk to Pamela about it. I'm going to connect with her on LinkedIn. Then I'm going to go over Kyle, and Kyle's going to help me finance. Only me, though, not my audience. So don't just understand this is a personal invite. I don't want everybody calling Kyle the money for their property. But in the finances, speaking of real estate, we all focus on those things and our health is affected. I want to go back over to Alexa for a moment, talk about the power to persevere, because you were diagnosed with cancer and I'm pretty sure you didn't see that coming. So we always, again, focus on our studies and different things like that. But then when our life is changed, what gave you power to persevere?
I believe it was just faith in general and experiencing these little nuances within my life that allowed me to see the different side of things. Like you said, I honestly had no idea it was coming. It took me by surprise. One minute I am off to go to school, prepare. I just did an awesome internship, just got into a very competitive internship, completed it, and then I'm off to continue my studies in college, and I'm hit with this crazy crisis. But, you know, even like with being a survivor now and everything going on today, I'm able to see, okay, like we're going to be going through this little circumstance. I mean, it's not little, it's pretty major. But at the end of the day, there will be an end to it. So just like from me going through what I went through now has allowed me to stay a little bit more calm within this, because it's like, okay, this is a short period of time. It's going to teach us a lesson, teaching me a huge lesson. And now let's see what could come out of it after. But just even like throughout treatment, I was experiencing a lot of strange things happen to me, where certain people will come into my life to teach me a lesson, or I would start to see signs and have these dreams that were just trying to send me messages or tell me, okay, like it's going to be okay, you have to do this, you have to do that. So just like trusting and having faith in some sort of other entity is what really helped me persevere. And then just knowing, like, okay, like, if this didn't happen to me, like, personally, like, I, like, it's happening to me because I can handle it. Like, someone had told me, like, God did not, I've been very spiritual through this, and someone told me, God did not give this to you if you weren't able to handle it. And I can totally agree that that is exactly what happened to me. I would have not been able to, if I couldn't handle it personally, like, it would have not been able to happen to me, but all these awesome things have come out of this experience. So it's like, you can look at it as, okay, your life is ending, but you can also look at it as, where is the opportunity here? How can I grow? How am I going to actually come down to having this acceptance around the circumstance and then shine after? And just like seeing the end of the light and having the end in mind in a way.
So I understand that you're sharing your story, and thank God you're still here. What made you see it as a power, as perseverance as a power?
You guys might not be as spiritual as me, but throughout this whole entire journey, I just connected with some other, like, power or something out there that just guided me on this track, whether it was me going to a supermarket and then having someone tell me, by the way, mindset is the number one thing that helps cure disease, this and that. And then me saying, wait, this is so weird that you're coming to me and saying this, because 2 days ago I was just diagnosed with cancer. Or then another instance where I was just seeing dimes and pennies everywhere trying to tell me, hey, like, there's something that's going to be happening. And then just looking up, what does this mean? Why am I seeing all these dimes and pennies? Or why are the ladybugs popping in my pockets and coming out of my hands? What are all these signs that I'm experiencing? What's going on? It's like another higher power trying to communicate something with you. So just like knowing that, like, there is something else out there that is trying to guide each and one of us, allowed me to have that feeling of, okay, within all these things, you have to trust what's going on, trust all the little signs that the universe is giving you, or guarding you, or something, that you have the ability to persevere from that. So,
So it's the higher power, perseverance. So I definitely understand it. Sometimes people look at perseverance is that it gives you a personal power, in that if you don't give up, if you don't, you know, keep going, then you're not going to make it through. Studies have shown that people who have some type of spirituality or who believe in a higher power or higher being survive in instances where other people, you know, passed away, because they knew that there was a reason. They knew there was something that kept them going. But I do want to go over to Abiola again over there in London. We're talking about power, and you write about superheroes, and one of the ways that superheroes are loved is because of their superpowers. Sometimes as kids, we wish we had superpowers. I always wanted to be invisible. Don't tell anybody that. That's our little secret. But we do. We wish we had superpowers. So, Abiola, when you were writing your book, what are some of the inspirations and motivations that you had in writing about superheroes?
I would say, like I mentioned earlier, like, I really was into comic books and I really liked X-Men. And I think the reason why I like things like X-Men and like Dragon Ball Z and like wrestling even is because they were very normal. Okay, not really X-Men because I had a gene. Like wrestling, for example, they're like normal people who can hit someone with a chair and they can still stand up and fight, or they can slam someone through a table and they can still walk. And I just thought that was just so crazy. It was almost like just finding these extra special people. And with X-Men, I just liked how everyone was just very unique in their powers. No one had like the same gift. And with Dragon Ball Z, it was just a case that everyone could somehow fly and create fireballs. And it was never explained why or how they can do that. It was just a thing. And I think I just kind of got really obsessed with being more than what meets the eye. Like what Alex was saying, I'm really spiritual, I'm a Christian, and like I believe that there is just like more substance to everybody and that there's something very special about everyone. And I think that was kind of my whole obsession, like supernatural, kind of thing, but rather than going like down like the witch way, I guess it was more just like superpower type of way and stuff. But if I had a superpower, I definitely would want teleportation, because I am always late. So if I had teleportation, I would not be late anymore. I would save you time. So
I also wanted to be a mind reader too. Let me just throw that in. I always felt like I wanted to read everybody's minds. But it was something interesting that you said about extra special people that actually reminded me of Pamela. So I want to jump over to Pamela real quick. Abiola was talking about extra special people, superpowers. And we believe to a certain extent that people with superpowers don't exist. But in the real world, people who are successful, we consider them extra special people, people who have raised millions, who have done commercial property, you know, been successful. You make it sound so easy to get commercial property, Pamela. You just get the deal, find the building, the money is there. Do you really, I mean, not to contradict what you already said, but do you really feel that it's just that easy, or you're not just some extra special person?
Well, I do. When people attend my, you know, classes that I speak on commercial real estate, they always say, the first thing that they say is, you make it seem so easy. And, you know, this is the first time I've been able to really figure out that I can actually do commercial real estate. So it is a, you know, learning process. I did want to tap on that, how important health is. And going back to Alexa, I just finished chemo on April 1st after being diagnosed with breast cancer. So I know how important it is now to reevaluate everything, and exactly what she was saying is exactly how I feel. So spending, you know, more than 30 years in commercial real estate, I'm kind of on a new mission, you know, to help women make sure that they get their 3D mammograms instead of their 2D mammograms. And I'm getting a little sidetracked, but when someone mentions, you know, Survivor, I'm new into that group. And so just wanted to throw that out. So I feel like my superpower now is really, you know, reevaluating everything, but still helping people in commercial real estate.
Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
Went through this journey, were you one of those people who said, I have to keep going even though I'm having this personal struggle? Or were you one of these people who said, you know what, let me take some time off to work on me and to work on what I'm going through?
I'm very spiritual too, and it's all about the attitude. I've always been a really, really positive person, and I just took a hold of it. What, you know, went through all the testing, all the surgeries, everything I did. I mean, you know, when people would come over here and visit me, thank goodness for wonderful friends and family. But everybody's like, are you sure you're going through anything? Because you look, you know, you're working every single day. I mean, I would take breaks when I didn't feel good, but I took the power and took it head on, and nothing's going to stop me. It's going to make me a lot better. And it really has. The sky's bluer, how it does change you. And now with, you know, this going on too, double dose of it, but it's just a reality just to take it on head on and live every, you know, every day what you want to do. Stop wasting time on things that you have no interest in, and focus on, you know, really what's important to you in life.
Mm. I can tell. I can definitely tell, because some people, they have this certain persona where if they get a hangnail, they're gone for the week. They have to go home. They have to meditate. Right. And you're like, oh my God, it's a hangnail. You know, do you have other people on the other side who have cancer and they're going to work, they're selling books, they're doing, you know, seminars. And you're like, okay, you have cancer. Why don't you sit down? And it's like, it's a different attitude. It's just interesting, because a really good friend of mine who'll be 99 this year, she walks a mile a day each way to wherever she's going, then a mile home. She goes, before the quarantine, she go do yoga and everything. And she calls me all the time. And she's like, I have to clean my kitchen. I usually clean it and mop everything about 3 times a week. And I'm like, I'm 44. I don't mop my kitchen three times a week, you know, but it's just like, you just see when people are going through different things, their attitudes, and you can just kind of tell who approaches it one way and then who approaches it another way. And I can just see that you're always going to keep going.
That's right. Yeah, definitely keep going. And so just looking at things a lot, you know, differently. So, but back to commercial real estate, I would always advise, there's so much great information out there, you know, on YouTube, to start looking at videos if you do have interest. And you, like anything, you have to take action, start talking to people, reach out to me if you have any interest. So when you drive by that old Blockbuster, all those opportunities that are now for sale, or you know someone selling a building, just, you know, reach out to me. I can help you walk through the process. We can team up together.
Okay, I'm gonna team up. We're gonna team up together for sure, because I need some commercial property to add to the As Sharifa Hardy banner. I'd be like, you know what? That whole section right there, that whole shopping center is As Sharifa. So we're definitely gonna talk. Where you're definitely
going to talk. So, Kyle, be a good legacy.
Yes, that's what I want. Generational wealth. That's what my focus is. You know, my kids are 23 and 26 now, so I got to make sure I have enough for the grandkids whenever they come.
I'm here for you. I have almost 19-year-old and 20-year-old son, and showing them how to invest in real estate now, because that's when you want to start, is to get in early.
Yes. Absolutely. So I'm going to have them learn with me. Kyle, okay. What's your superpower?
You know, I initially I used to want to have the power to, you know, like Professor X, be able if you're viewing audience doesn't know who Professor Xavier is of the X-Men, but he can read minds and he can influence. But when you watch him go through the torture of having that gift, you don't want it. So after watching a number of people that I love dearly battle cancer and transition to spend life and eternity with Christ, I started, especially after I lost my sister, it's tough, but I said, you know what, if I had a superpower, it'd be the power to heal. It'd be the power to heal, period. Like, no matter what someone's going through, so if it's physical issues, you know, I could just touch them. If sometimes it's really all up here, sometimes with people, they're not physical, it's just they're trapped in their head in a really dark place. So I could just touch them or speak a good word and they'd be good to go. So mine would be the power to heal.
That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that just touched my heart. Mm-hmm. When people say beautiful things like that, I'm like, oh, why didn't I think of that? I want to heal. But I think that's what we're all doing today. We're healing the world because we're sharing information. And that's one of the things scripture tells us, my people suffer from lack of knowledge. So that's one of the reasons why I do the show, is because I want to bring people the knowledge, no matter what the topic is, because each of you are different in your own way, which is beautiful, because we have Abiola over here who does fantasy and she creates nonfiction books or fiction books, where then you have Alexa who says, you know what, I want to share my story. Then you have Pamela over here who does commercial real estate and she helps people through her story. And then you have Kyle who says, you know what, you have to make sure your family is taken care of. I love your example with your wife and her being concerned, what am I going to do without you? And you're like, you know what, you are going to be taken care of. And sometimes that's our biggest fear, is that what do we do if something happens to the people we love the most? So we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to our audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. So we're going to go ahead and start with Abiola.
Okay. What I would say is, especially right now, I know everyone's going through some hard times. Every country, or in your case, every state, is probably handling things very differently. Some people are outside, some people are still not outside. But just remember, there will be an end to all of this, and there will be a conclusion. There will be a cure. this will not go on forever, so just hang in there. And also, I've been telling, like, I work with a lot of teenagers, like, especially at church and stuff, and I've been telling them a lot, like, you know, use this time efficiently and think about, like, what it is that you really want to do. Because if anything, this time has shown us that we can't predict anything that's going to happen. Like, no one would have thought in January that this would be going down. Like, this is all just ridiculous, you know what I mean? So I feel like this is just a really great time to really evaluate where you are in life, and are you really doing what your passion is? And I think what's good about this panel is we're all doing something that we're very passionate about, and we're all touching someone in some positive way. And I think if anyone is out there maybe not feeling satisfied in their life in whatever capacity, this is a really great time to really make those changes and just go for it. And if you want to write a book, write the book. We want to hear about the crazy ideas you have. If you've got an amazing life journey, you've overcome something, like, there's always someone that's going to want to read that. So just go for it.
Yes, words to live by, just go for it. Alexa, what do you have for us?
I totally agree with everything Abiola was saying. You know, at the end of the day, our lives are very short. And if you're not doing something that you don't love, then what's the point of life? So you really need to take this time also, yeah, to just hone in and see what you want, how you want to show up to the world, what you want to do on a day-to-day basis, especially me as I'm now approaching graduation. This Saturday, I'm supposed to be virtually graduating.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I've been taking this time in quarantine to just kind of figure out, well, okay, things are not really working out the way that I planned, just like everyone else, but what can I do right now with my time to capitalize on those things that I really do love? What do I love? Let me sit in meditation and try to just, like, hone in and understand what my soul is asking me to do. Like, even with the book that I wrote, I did that because it was something that my soul just kept telling me to do. And I asked myself, if tomorrow was the last day of you being on this earth and living, what would you want to show the world? So I guess we can also just try to use this time to say, okay, if tomorrow is the last day that I'll be here, how am I going to contribute? What light am I going to bring to the world? Yeah. And how can I persevere and help others persevere as well? And also knowing that there is light at the end of the tunnel, everything will go back eventually.
Yes. Thank you, Alexa. That was so beautiful. You could just see your heart and everything. It definitely comes across. Kyle, what would you like to share with our audience?
I think I'll start with two questions. The first one, because I think the quality of your questions determines the trajectory of your life. And I think here's two questions that really changed it for me and changes it for the people I have the opportunity to guide. If what you thought to be true about money and finances, remember, you can always put something else in there. If what you thought to be true about God, whatever. If what you thought to be true about money and finances turned out not to be true, when would you want to know? The second question, fill in the blank. When it gets down to my money and my financial situation, all I really care about is. And then finally, in the words of Warren Buffett, he has two rules of money. Number one, first rule, don't lose money. Second rule, see rule one. So I sum it up like this. Remember, there's more to be gained in avoiding the losses than to go chase rate of return and gains in the market. So the whole purpose of a fiduciary-based financial advisor like myself is I just want to help people make better decisions. And one of the ways you make better decisions is you get better questions to clarify so you don't get distracted by all the noise. And so those are two really strong clarifying questions that can open your heart, open your mind to what else is possible while checking your confirmation bias. So that's what I would leave with your viewers and audience today. Those two questions.
I think that is beautiful. I'm going to have to give that some thought. And I love the way you broke it down. Like, I almost feel like I was in church. I just wanted to be like, amen, hallelujah. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, we talking about finances. This is wrong show. But you're very inspirational the way you explain things. So thank you for that, Kyle. And take us out there, Pamela.
I live by two mottos, or, you know, based off of work, but find a way and never, never, never give up are two mottos that I always live by. I guess I have a third quote. I always like that. You either have excuses or results, but not both. So if I'm here to help anyone who's interested in learning commercial real estate, you know, reach out to me. I'd love to team up with you. And next time you see that vacant building or that building, you know, think of what can go there. And I'm here to help you, you know, learn about commercial real estate and make a lot of money in it.
I'm just going to go out with my mask on, of course, and find buildings just so I can work with Pamela. I got to get me some commercial real estate. I have definitely enjoyed the show. I want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I hope you enjoyed yourself as well and that you learned something. I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archive. If you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at ashsharifa.com. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Struggling to increase your sales or website conversions? Are you looking for new ways to promote your business through social media or any other campaign? If yes, then you're at the right place. Ask Sharifa has 25 years of experience and the track record to guide you to success. From business planning to social media marketing, from website designing to website development, from search engine optimization to paid traffic, we will research your business, your products and/or services, and the competition to develop a custom growth strategy for your business. Contact us now, and we will help you bring your business growth to the next level. For more information, visit www.asksharifa.com.